honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Remembering a few of those heroes who were sorely missed at the Thanksgiving table this year, including Tuskegee Airman Frank Macon, who passed away this week at the age of 97. Interviews he did here and elsewhere preserve his legacy, and so does his book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot, The Making of a Tuskegee Airman. Liz Harper co-wrote that book with Frank, and she explained to us the unique way that all came about.
I was at the Griffith Center, which is for troubled and adjudicated kids at the time. And I thought, well, I'll have Frank come speak. And so he did. He went multiple times. And I knew the kids were always mesmerized by him. Even these kids who normally wouldn't sit for 5 minutes would sit and listen to Frank tell these stories for like an hour and a half and not even move. So that always struck me as well. And then at that dinner, Chris said, we have to get Frank in the air again. He's going to be 92. And I thought, well, we live at the Air Force Academy. I should be able to figure that out. So we made some phone calls, and they just took it and ran. The Academy gave Frank a birthday flight, and then he spoke to all the freshman history classes. And then they introduced him at Mitchell Hall in front of all 3,000-plus cadets to a standing ovation. And I drove him that day, and on the way home, he said, all those reporters, everybody, whenever we do an event, they want me to write a book. And I said, well, why don't you, Frank? And he says, well, I'm dyslexic. And I just said, well, you want some help? And we started the next week, and here we are 4 years later with a book in hand and a great friendship, and just it's gone from there. So that's kind of how the whole thing happened. It was really quite providential. Frank has never let anything get in his way. And the other thing, even in the midst of things that were not always easy for him as a kid, like the dyslexia, not knowing his mom and dad, the racial elements of growing up in that time frame, Frank does not have an angry bone in his body. He so wants to leave a legacy and help kids. And he doesn't care if you're rich, you're poor, you're black or white, purple, green, he would say. It doesn't matter. He wants to help those kids. And he says, you can't listen to what other people are telling you. God gave you a purpose. You have to find what you're good at, and you go for that. So that has always struck me. And I think it strikes the adults who are around him as well, because he could choose to be kind of bitter just because of some of his circumstances. But there isn't an angry or a bitter bone in his body.
Who is this book for, and what do you hope people get out of it when they read it?
Well, by trade, I'm a teacher, and Frank wanted to help kids. So when we sat down and purposely, he's had so many interesting facts about history, but the goal was to really reach kids, to get them interested in history. Even kids who wouldn't normally pick up a book, it's written as if Frank's talking to a class, so it's great for a teacher or a grandparent or a parent to read to a child. And our goal was just to help kids find their niche, find a purpose, never to quit. And I know that kind of maybe sounds cliche, but Frank has had so many, you know, interactions with famous people. He's related to Frederick Douglass. His grandpa was a Buffalo Soldier. So all these things happened around him, and it didn't even faze him. He just knew he wanted to fly, and he was going to fly, and so be it. I mean, he jumped off the chicken coop, like I said, and all kinds of things. So our goal then, we sat down and decided to focus the book to the middle reader, which is like fourth grade through eighth grade. Adults really like it as well. But that was when Frank struggled the most in school. So that's the age group we targeted, because he wants to help kids who struggle with school. I'm just grateful for our friendship. You know, we've spent so much time. I'm just grateful for my kids. I get choked up talking about it. My son's birthday is the same day as Frank's. And what a blessing, you know, my 14-year-old gets to hang out with a World War II hero. And what do? They make parachutes together and throw them off the stairwell, because that's just who Frank is. He's so fun-loving. He's just a treasure. You know, that to me is more important than whatever comes of all these events and the book. Sorry, I get kind of emotional, but it just really is so amazing to me. I hope that people just realize what a privilege that generation is, and we're short on time. And I hope that they spend some time, if they know somebody of that age group, just sit and visit with them. they're just amazing. You know, it's hard to even put in words, really. But really, by the grace of God, our families cross paths, and it's just been a treasure for all of us.
And now we have this book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot, that I'm sure many who are listening right now are going to order and treasure themselves. That was Liz Harper, who wrote the book with Frank. And I promised you more of Frank, The Legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. How do you explain it? What gives you the most pride when it comes to being associated with that legendary group?
Well, I could say that they proved the people really wrong that was against us. And unfortunately, Lindbergh was one of the top people that was against us learning to fly. In later years, I've heard guys come up to me that said, I was flying a B-17. Were you one of those guys? You saved my life. And all I could, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I wasn't one of them, but I know some of the guys that were. I'm afraid that would have been very hard to control because, you know, if I'd have seen an enemy airplane, I would have probably broke formation and went out after them. But most of the guys stayed right, like Davis said, you stick right with those bombers. And the fighters were intermingled with the bombers so that the fighters couldn't get in. They were the first to shoot down that jet that they...
The German ME-262?
Yeah. At meetings, some of them would laugh about how they did it. Yeah, they would tease it, keep it up, because they knew the fuel consumption was right pretty terrible, and they'd keep it up until it ran out of fuel. And, of course, then it was a glider, so they could get it, you know. They quit sending them up after those. When they knew the red tails were there, they just forget it. They didn't bother.
Well, and you mentioned that you go out to the academy and talk to cadets. You've written this book to tell your story, and in ways the story of the Tuskegee Airmen as well. In all your associations with other Tuskegee Airmen over the years, what have you drawn from that?
Well, the association and the know that they suffered... Or I suffered some of the embarrassments that they did. Some of those guys, when they got off the ship and come back, they had the sign colored on this side and whites on that side, you know. And the officers' club, a lot of them, they couldn't go in there until finally these guys found out that these are the guys who are saving our lives. And then the officers forced them to let them come into the officers' club.
You were already out of the service when this happened, but when you heard that President Truman was integrating the armed forces, that segregation, as far as our military was concerned, was no more, what did that mean to you?
Well, I was ready to go back in, and as I was saying, I was working out at Carson, and this colonel just said, no, you're not, and he got me out of it because I had the papers to go back in. I was in the reserves.
Well, as you said, you spent decades working on airplanes. You know, I don't know how much you can talk about there because you said some of it may still be secret. But one of the things I read about you, that you helped with modifications and improvements on a lot of different airplanes, and that you even became an accident investigator and suggested some changes that may save lives as far as air travel is concerned?
Yeah, that when I got out of Fort Carson, a research company here, and it was made up of ex-cadets from the Air Force Academy. There was an aircraft at a DC-3 that went into the seawall in Boston. From the FAA, they got the contract to try to determine what caused the accident. I got the records from the FAA, and I read them over and got thinking about it, and I said, well, the new pilots learn to fly instruments and they're told that you trust the instruments and not your feelings, at which old pilots, that instrument panel could be blank, as far, you know, and they trusted their senses, you know. So I said that something went wrong with the instrument. I got the autopilot, a model of it, and got it in the lab, and I said, well, this thing's working all right. It can't. And I got to thinking, you start at the accident and work back, and that was what I was taught. So I went back and I finally figured out that there must have been something in the electrical system that overloaded it and wiped out the autopilot, and they thought they were at the 500-foot descent or whatever they had set for descent speed, and the needle was sitting right on there, and so they just said, well, we're okay.
So because of that electrical issue, their computerized or automatic altimeter was giving them a reading that was inaccurate. They thought they had more space.
Yeah. And so then they got busy and corrected that system.
Well, and just so I understand clearly, the situation with the airliner in Boston that crashed, and that crash killed everyone aboard the plane, you, through your detective work, figure out what had gone wrong. The fix prevents that from happening again. So, in theory, your determination and your skill in deciphering that saved a lot of lives.
Oh, well, yeah, I've thought about that and said, well, you did do something.
Yeah. Well, and you've hinted that you did a lot more, but some of it may still be classified. Are there any hints you can give us, some general ideas of the kind of stuff you're working on?
Well, a lot of laser stuff. The way it was set up, I was presented with one problem, and I overcame that. The guy in the next office was given a problem, and all of this, and I don't know, some lab in Mississippi probably got something else, and then this was all taken to some place like Kirtland Air Force Base, and they put all this information.
So they had to separate different elements of the project so no one would know all of it.
That's why I can't say what it was, because I don't know. But I knew some of it had to do with lasers. You know, when I was coming along, the Negro family, people would say, oh, the white folks won't let us do this, and the white folks won't. And it was the white folks that was pushing me to do these things. So I didn't listen to them. They just didn't want to do it, that's all. They just rather complain than get it done. I never was. I'll complain about something, but it's... but I always find a way that I can get around that situation. I can say I've had a lot of help, and that was, I think, my curiosity is what people are interested in, to help me. And I help myself. I don't stand around, well, I can't do this, and I can't do that. No, by the time they can't do it, I've got it done. You know, that's just the way I am. And I depend on me to get her done. People say, well, you're 96. Well, you want to be doing that. Oh, get out of my way. I can get to, you know. By the time you try to do something for me, I've got it done.
Well, then maybe you're the guy to ask this question, because I'm just thinking, I hear your perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, but even though you are aware of the segregated military, you didn't think that was right, your lens wasn't always focused on racial issues. That wasn't your priority or focus.
I don't have time to be focusing on that and complaining and all like that, but I just get and do it.
So I'm just curious, because in today's world, even though our military is integrated and the civil rights movement has happened, there's still in the news, you hear about racial tensions and you hear the verbal volleys being fired back and forth. What advice do you have for all of us in navigating that? What do you think could help us get it right?
Shut up and get something done. And quit complaining and quit looking at that, because I don't look at a white person. I do not look at a, quote, black person. And those terminologies, I have never seen a white person in my life, and I've never seen a black one. You take a piece of paper, a white, and put your hand on her, you're not white. I take that same black piece of paper and put it on her, and this color and dividing people up by color or something like that is stupid, just absolutely stupid.
You know what I didn't ask you, because, I mean, all your time in the air, did you ever have some scares, some close calls, some moments where you weren't sure if that landing was going to go quite right?
Flying is many moments of boredom, all shared by a few split seconds of sheer terror. I was in a real serious helicopter crash at Carson. We took off and flew around and he put the engine at idle to come into the land, and it quit. Engine, I said, well, you got rotor speed. Just keep your rotor speed up. We'll be all right. And of course, you know, when you get close to the ground, you call what they call a collective, and it changes the pitch of the blades, and you get a cushion, and you just sit down. It's no problem. And he said, you think we should go around again? And that little small voice in my head said no. But I said, yeah, let's give it another go. This time the engine caught, and then it quit again, and he panicked, and he pulled the collective in too high and killed all the energy in the blades. And we hit like a ton of rock, and it rolled up. And it was a type of helicopter that you see on MASH. It rolled over, hit a mud puddle. It had been raining, and it hit a mud, the skid hit a mud puddle and flipped over and landed on the side I was on, of course. But there was a hole where some of the instruments went through the bubble, and it was happened to be in the summertime. We didn't have the doors on there. That's another thing. Lucky, and we jumped out and come out there. But I got bruised up, but I didn't break anything. I got bruised up pretty bad. In fact, I've got an ankle that lets me know that it's still around. But anyway, I had plenty of time, civil service time, and so they gave me a medical retirement from that. And that's how I got away from Carson. And while I was recovering, that's when I got that job with the research company.
How do you explain your story? Because I'm just thinking about it. A kid born to a teenage mother, raised by his aunts, struggles to read, looks at the page and the numbers and the letters are all over the place, and it's detective work just to try to figure out what's said there, that he could learn to fly as a teenager, be part of a legendary group of pilots known as the Tuskegee Airmen, do life-saving research on the highest tech aeronautical machines in the country. That doesn't sound like a story that unfolds every day. How do you explain it?
Well, I'm not what you call a religious person, but saying that, I do believe in a supreme being, and I think that this supreme being said, this is going to be your job, mister, and get it done.
He got it done for 97 years. That was the late Frank Macon. With his passing this week, only about four dozen Tuskegee Airmen are still with us. Again, his book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot, is linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. I know it can seem kind of somber on those rare occasions when we listen back to stories from veterans who have passed, but it's also a powerful reminder of the importance of preserving the stories of those who remain. So let that be an encouragement to you this holiday season. If you're able to spend some time with an aging veteran in your life, why not ask a few questions? Be patient and be prepared to hear a thing or two you've never heard before. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.